Yaakov's baking a dish. Esav comes in and he's tired, and he tells Yaakov, give me some of that red stuff. Yaakov gives him bread and the red stuff. He eats, he drinks, he leaves, and he mocks the fact that he lost his rights to the firstborn. We're talking about the day that Avraham Avinu died. All the leaders of the nation stood in a row and said, we lost the world leader. We lost the captain of the ship, the Talmud and Bava Metzia tells us. Meaning even the people who opposed Avraham Avinu throughout his life, on the day that Avraham Avinu dies, they all stand and they say, there goes a great man. Avraham Avinu was amazing. And there was a tremendous eulogy. The world was saying it's a different place without Avraham Avinu. The only person who doesn't sense a loss on the day Avram dies is his own grandson Esav. He senses nothing. And what he's interested in is, feed me. That smells good. I want some of that. And Yaakov says, Grandpa died today. I'm preparing this for Abba. And it doesn't move Esav. It teaches us where Esav's already holding. And we could learn from this how one's mundane desires can bring one down. A person has to eat. A person needs to sustain themselves. But how connected is one to the food? How much is that a focus of one's life? Esav is coming in from the field. He's tired. He's been focused on the physical. And now he walks in and there's something brewing. Esav's had quite a day. He murdered, he raped, and now there's food cooking. So he's very stole. So he's focused on the food. And so now Esav's willing to forgo every type of holiness. It's not only Avram he doesn't connect to, it's his own rights to holiness that he doesn't connect to. And Yaakov tells him, you know, you're supposed to be the leader of this family. You're supposed to be the firstborn. You take on Avram's name. He says, it doesn't matter to me. Give me the food. Not interested. Because if a person allows his material desires to spread their wings over him, a person can be so steeped in it that it takes full control of the person. And a person can numb the sensitivities that a person should have for holy things. Now, this is a very important point in building ourselves. Because very often, a person can focus on something very physical. And that focus takes a person away from the things that a person should cherish. And this can happen in every relationship. This can happen. There was a siyum. They invited me to siyum and show up. You see a lot of people at the siyum. They bring out the food for the siyum. So, I didn't bring lunch that day because I was told there was a siyum. I figured, maximum, go and buy yourself a roll, 2 shekel. Nothing happened. Okay? I come to the siyum and they bring out the food. And I see people pouncing on the food. So I sat back. I didn't want to pounce on the food. I'm looking around me and I'm wondering, how hungry are these people? What happened that everyone's pouncing all over the food? Are these people who didn't eat this morning? Is there... People talk about highfalutin ideals. People can be at an event and take seconds and thirds and not stop to ask themselves, did the guy next to me eat? But maybe that's important. Maybe that's more important than the question, did I eat? There are yeshivas where the lunchroom gets full 10 minutes after lunch starts. Because there are a lot of people who don't want to take if there might not be enough for the next guy. So they want to make sure not to be the first in line. Let me make sure someone else gets. Now, everyone has to eat. No one's saying a person should starve. But there's a focus. And the more we focus on the physical, the more it can blot out other things that should be important to us. And this is relevant to every type of desire we have. There's something which I don't connect to, but it's still a concept. It's called the fast of the rush. They call it the fast of Rabbeinu Yonah. And when a person wants something, he says, okay, I want it. I'm going to take control of myself and I'm not going to indulge myself in it. I'm going to take a step back. If I want a piece of cake, maybe I'll eat half a piece of cake. But I want a whole piece of cake, right? But I want to control myself. I won't eat the whole piece of cake. So I don't connect to this. Bigger people than me said it. I'm not saying it's a right idea or a wrong idea. It's beyond my league. But the concept is important. Am I so focused on what I desire that I lose focus on what's important to me? My father once suggested that that's why we cover the challahs Friday night. The man is coming in from the field, and he's been working all day. He's ravenous. He comes to the Shabbos table. He's capable of sitting down and eating the bread and forgetting the holiness of the Kiddush. So my father said, we have the concepts Chazal taught us, but maybe there's also an idea that we cover the challahs to tell the man, start Shabbos with the holiness of sanctifying the day. Start Shabbos. Naturally, we would say, leave the wine for the middle of the meal. Who wants to drink wine on an empty stomach? Who wants to make kiddush? Leave me alone. Let me eat my bread. In 5 minutes, I'll enjoy making kiddush. It's not natural. It's not the way we would naturally build the meal, to start with a cup of wine and make kiddush. So Chazal said, cover the bread. Remember what you're doing when you come to the meal. It's not just a meal about filling your stomach. So you start the meal with a kiddush, the idea of kiddushah. Coming back to Rav Charlap, so when Esav comes in from the field, the only thing he's focused on is the physical. And one can choose where one's focus lies to the point of excluding, not seeing or hearing or caring about anything else. And this goes in every direction. When a person has a slight cut in their finger, if they sit there focused on it, it can be the most painful thing in the world. And if you could alter their focus, then suddenly they can deal with it. And this is a very important tool even as parents. My son, my little kids were taking a bath, and so my 2-year-old pulled the cord that was holding up the shower head, and my 5-year-old got the shower head smack in his face, fell straight down, boom. And we didn't know if it knocked out teeth or not. I'm saying it hit him so bad, we weren't sure. And he was livid, and his mouth was filled with blood, and you couldn't talk to him. Now, we had to see if there was a tooth that had to be extracted, if we had to take him in, what's going on? And the kid's mouth is filled with blood, and you can't talk to him. He's livid. He's in pain, right? He's very focused on his pain. So this is a kid that won't let a dentist touch him. Bringing him to a dentist is a challenge in its own right. So we played a game. I put on gloves, and I told him, Dr. Abba is going to check you. Now, my wife says, why are you putting on gloves? So I told her behind his back, I said, maybe if he gets used to seeing me with gloves, then when the doctor puts on gloves, it won't be as scary. I said, Dr. Abba is going to check you. I have a headlamp from my bike. I brought 2 headlamps. I said, one for me and one for you. Okay, he gets a headlamp. I get a headlamp. I said, okay, now I'm going to touch the sides of your cheek. I want you to smile to my fingers. I didn't tell him I need to look at his teeth. I said, I want you to smile. Suddenly he's smiling. His mouth is filled with blood. I can't see where it's coming from. I said, okay, now we're going to have a contest. I'm going to take warm water. You're going to take warm water. We filled 2 cups. What I want you to do is rinse and spit out the warm water. And we're going to see who spits out a cup of water first, me or you. So I give him a cup of water. He goes to one sink. I go to the other sink. What I want is that he should clean out his mouth so I could see it. His mouth is so swollen, he can't hold the water in his mouth. When he sticks in the water, it spills out because his lip is already swollen out to here. But he's focused on something else. A minute ago, he was wailing at the top of his lungs. He's in such pain. His teeth are falling out. He's in such pain. He can't handle it. There's no one to talk to. But now that he has a headlight on his head, he's focused on the headlight. He's focused on the game. He's focused on the contest with me. Who's going to win in gargling and spitting out the water? Suddenly, the pain is gone. He's smiling. He's laughing. All his siblings are watching, and the contest is going on. Me and him, and he wins, of course, right? Wait a second. Where'd all the pain go? He's still in pain. A minute later, I ask him, does the tooth hurt? Yes, Abba, it hurts. But now he's not crying. Now I could look at his mouth. Now he shifted his focus. This doesn't only work with a 5-year-old. It works with us, too. When we focus on our pain, it magnifies it. Our focus can blot out everything else. Asaph's focused on the physical. We make choices all the time what we're going to focus on. And it blots out other things. You could be in shul and be focused on the watch. You could be in shul and be focused on the experience. You could be standing the last 5 minutes of Yom Kippur and your thoughts are racing. When am I finally going to be able to eat? You could be standing in shul the last 5 minutes of Yom Kippur and your thoughts are racing. In 5 minutes, I won't have this spiritual opportunity. It's my last 5 minutes of Yom Kippur. It's the last 5 minutes of Aser Simei Tshuva. Our focus shifts our senses. The point of Esav was where his focus was. So everything else is irrelevant. The whole world respects Avram. But he's so focused on the physical right now, it doesn't exist. We can all be there. Every person can attain that level of Esav. Very often our frustrations in life stem from a very minimal focus on something that's so important to me. Couples can fight about the size of the salad that she cuts. I like my vegetables cut smaller. I know your father likes it bigger, but why can't you cut it smaller? That's important. Suddenly it becomes important. Yeah, sure it's important. Our focus can blot out everything else. You can talk to a person and tell them, can you be thankful for what's good in your life? I was talking to a person yesterday, and he had just had a fight with his wife, and he was so upset, and we were walking together, and I said, you know, can I just ask you, is there anything good in your life? And he says, right now, no. And as we're talking, it's raining, right, yesterday, and we're walking in the stone floor of the old city where it's hard to balance yourself. A guy with CP walks right next to us. And the guy can't walk straight. He can't keep his 2 feet straight. Without the rain and the stone, I couldn't understand how he wasn't falling. It was scary to watch. And we're standing there talking, and he passes in front of us. And he's wobbling from leg to leg on the stone floor, moving forward. And you can see he's having a very hard time balancing. Taller than both of us, right? And he could really reach the two sides of the sidewalk, the two sides of the walls. And he's wobbling. And I look at him, and I look at this guy. We're both Baruch Hashem healthy. And I just asked him, you have anything you can be thankful for? And he got the hint. He looks at the other guy and says, I take it back. Oh, boom, you broke the focus. Wait a second. Life isn't only about what's annoying you. There's more to life. Wait a second. There's so much to be thankful for. But at the moment that he's upset, the only thing he can think about is what he's upset about. And we're all that way. What we learn from Esav is to teach us about us. We have to break the focus to be able to see the spiritual. We want to reach the point where we could focus on the physical and forget the other stuff.